Case for argument, Hamilton versus Frank. Mr. Reschetter?
Yes. May it please the court. My name is Daniel D. Reschetter, Jr., and I represent the petitioner appellant Marvin Simulton. I also note that this particular panel of judges has before handled cases regarding habeas corpus matters and specifically regarding guilty pleas and the sufficiency thereof. So I will be brief. I also notice I only have 5 minutes, so I'll be very brief. What I am contending and what we contend is that what the state court did was contrary to or involved an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law as determined by the Supreme Court. Now, immediately right there, I've got a problem because, of course, the Supreme Court has also said that the state courts have an ability to adapt their own procedure to a guilty plea proceeding, and they give them a great deal of discretion in that regard. However, there are a couple of precepts that simply must be met. Boykin versus Alabama tells us that a guilty plea is more than an admission of conduct. It's a conviction. It is, because the only alternative to a guilty plea is a jury trial. We have to be on the watch, therefore, for pleas that come from either coercion or terror, which isn't here, but ignorance and incomprehension, which I feel is established here. Brady versus U.S. tells us that central to the plea is the admission in open court that the defendant committed the acts charged, and I would say also that those acts charged are...
Well, most of the people who plead guilty probably don't have a college education. What difference could that make?
Your Honor, excellent point, and it's one I was going to bring up. We're now dealing in these courts, I think, more and more with people who have lesser education by nature.
We always did.
Oh, excuse?
We always did.
We always do. Yeah. But I think even more so now because
he knew enough about what he was doing to discuss an Alford plea.
Yeah.
But also, too, we can also see that an Alford plea is not what was going to happen.
I know, but he raised an issue that is a very specific legal term, and it's... kind of esoteric when you think about it. You have to be fairly knowledgeable of what you're doing in terms of pleas or not pleas to even think in terms of Alford. I would venture that there are a number of lawyers floating around the United States that have the foggiest notion of what we're talking about when we discuss an Alford plea.
However, on the other hand, when one is a roommate with several other individuals who are being held prior to their sentencing or plea hearing,
that is, you develop a sophistication. Yeah, precisely.
It's
a sophistication that makes the plea appropriate, too.
But the other thing, too, and because what I'm trying to make clear, and I hope I do that through my brief, if not also through my oral argument, is that a person has to admit the conduct. And in this particular case, when you take a look at what's there, the question of consent becomes the underlying problem. And now if we have an Alford situation, well, of course, I guess that's not really a problem because we're trying to take advantage of the plea deal. Yeah. In this particular case, no. He brought it up and he was clearly told, no. This is a true, it's got to be a guilty plea. It has to be. You have to plead to that particular conduct. Now, the only thing that I am saying in this particular case, given the situation with his education, the problems that happened during the course of that first attempt at a plea hearing and then that second plea hearing, one of the things you can do, you don't have to do, though, is an elocution. You just simply say to the defendant, well, you know, tell me what you did, how it violates the law. And that's all that would have had to have been done in this particular instance. Doesn't have to be done in every case. Should have been done in this case. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Reschetter. Mr. Gansner?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Assistant Attorney General William Gansner for the respondent appellee in this case. The critical question, I think, here, just as a matter of fact and legal determination was rendered by the Wisconsin Court of Appeals when it affirmed Mr. Simulton's conviction on a no-merit appeal, in which his own attorney concluded and advised the court that he believed there was no merit to a challenge to Mr. Simulton's guilty plea. When the Court of Appeals said, with respect to the question of whether or not there had been any misunderstanding by the trial court when the plea was accepted, or any improper inquiry as to what the extent of Mr. Simulton's education was, after noting that, as the record reflects, that any misstatement at the time of the guilty plea as to what the extent of Mr. Simulton's education was ultimately clarified with the understanding that while he did not have a high school diploma, that he had gone through the 11th grade. But the key point is simply this, as the Court of Appeals found. Simulton does not allege, and the record does not show, any impairment in his ability to understand the matters on which he was asked during the plea colloquy at his guilty plea. The dictates of Boykin, broad as they are, as obligatory as they are upon the states to make sure that in the acceptance of pleas of guilty or no contest or Alford pleas, a state goes ensures that the guilty plea process, that the plea process is one in which a record is created to demonstrate and to prove for later for further review and to make sure that at the time of the plea, the defendant understands the consequences of his action, the nature of the charges, and the elements of the offense. Those requirements were satisfied in this case. There was nothing in the decision of the Court of Appeals of Wisconsin affirming Mr. Simulton's conviction that is either contrary to or an unreasonable application of the dictates of Boykin.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kastner. Mr. Reschetter, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Okay, but that'll be sufficient.
It is not the defendant, or in this case the petitioner's duty, to affirmatively establish that he understood what he was doing at this particular point in time. That should be clear from the record. It should be clear from the transcript. It should be clear from everything in front of you. And I'll tell you that it isn't. And if you take a look at that, do take a look at it as you will. And I'll tell you, it does not and it cannot dispel any feeling or any doubt that this person did admit the offense. He didn't. It shows doubt. It's clear through there. It simple little questions could have been asked that would have dispelled it. Doesn't, again, have to be done in every case. But in this particular case, and with certain defendants, we just have to take our time and do that.
What would be a simple question?
Simple question would have been, Mr. Simulton, tell the court what acts you are pleading guilty to, and just simply tell us what acts you're pleading guilty to. Brief elocute. That's all.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Well, thank you very much.
You were appointed, weren't you?
I was appointed by the district court. I think I'm going to have to do a nunk-pro-tunk order in this court because I got the informa pauperis done and everything else, and I'll have about one more motion coming.
Peace.
Thank you very much.